Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Tea or coffee, which do you prefer? Welcome, everybody, to day two of our trends. We're talking about tea farmers switching to coffee. And if you have your magazine with you, please turn to page 42. Yesterday, we talked about Pu'er, China, and the trends that is going on in that part of the world. Remember that that's a remote area in southwestern China. It's a city near the Laos-Myanmar border. And today with me in the studio, I have Simon and Amanda. And if you weren't with us yesterday, we'd like to review a little bit for you. So, Simon, what is one thing really that stood out to you from our article yesterday?
I guess the main thing that stood out to me was this idea that Chinese farmers would even be considering changing their tea farms into coffee farms. You know, when you think about China, one of the things you think about is tea. We have expressions in English like, I wouldn't do something for all the tea in China, you know, things like that. And so it seems strange to me that these farmers would be willing to switch to coffee. But of course, we learned yesterday that coffee can be much more lucrative. It can earn farmers a lot more money. And it's growing in popularity very, very quickly.
I think another reason it's growing in popularity is that a lot of the young people are studying abroad or overseas, and they're being introduced to the lifestyle of drinking coffee. You know, coffee is renowned around the world. And they're realizing that, well, this is good. I like this. What once was a bitter drink, I like it. But also that part of it is that it shows that they have some kind of status. If you're drinking coffee, you know, especially from a Starbucks cup, it's like, oh, I have the money to afford to buy this cup of coffee.
Right, because I think we learned yesterday that actually a Chinese Starbucks habit is one of the most expensive habits in the world. Mm. So if you are, you're definitely showing that you have status. Mm. But don't think that coffee is totally replacing tea in China. We also learned that 120,000 tons of coffee was drunk last year in China, but 1 million tons of tea was consumed. So it's not like it's totally replacing it at all. But it's growing. It's growing. It's becoming lucrative. Well, today we're going to talk about commitment and the benefits that farmers are finding. So let's go to the left column on page 42 of your Advanced Studio Classroom magazine, and let's hear this reading.
Commitment is the key. Yunnan, considered one of the most biodiversified regions in the world, is responsible for almost all of the roughly 60,000 tons of coffee grown in China. The provincial government has plans to increase coffee production to 200,000 tons by 2020. But growers will have to invest heavily to guarantee consistent quality, experts said. It's still very messy, said Safi Malik, co-founder of Shangri-La Farms, a boutique coffee brand that carries beans from Yunnan. A lot of farmers don't have training. There's great coffee there. It just needs to be found and worked on. A big test is whether Chinese farmers will remain committed to the crop through price fluctuations. This year, growers are being offered about $1.20 a pound, half of what they earned 2 years ago.
So we see from our title here that it's going to require commitment. Commitment is the key to success. So, Yunnan is considered one of the most biodiversified regions in the world. This is an interesting word we have here, biodiversity or biodiversified region. Amanda, do you want to tell us about it?
Well, biodiversified is one of our specialized terms, and it is referring to the number and types of plant and animal species that exist in a particular environmental area or in the world in general. And the interesting thing about Yunnan is that it actually has three geographic regions very different from each other in their natural conditions, but they all meet together in Yunnan. So, for instance, maybe listeners can think, well, if for you maybe you have a place that's very desert-like, or you have a place that's very humid, and these come together in one place. Yunnan is like that. It also has six major rivers that run through it, the very large rivers, and they have 37 lakes. So it's a very prosperous area to grow crops, or has the potential for that. So this could make it a very good area for growing coffee.
Yeah, and in fact, it is the area that grows much of China's coffee, if not almost all of it. It actually says here this area is responsible for almost all of the roughly 60,000 tons of coffee grown in China. The number stands out as interesting because it shows us that China is actually importing a lot of coffee. You'll remember from yesterday's reading that it said China drank 120,000 tons of coffee last year. But they mention further in this paragraph that the provincial government has plans to increase coffee production to 200,000 tons by 2020. And so obviously the popularity of coffee has suggested to these government officials that this is a good way to go in terms of making money.
Right. And I'd like to just take a look back at this word again, diversify. What does just the word diversify mean, or diversified? Simon, what does that word mean?
Well, the root word there is diverse, which means lots of different kinds of things. And specifically, this word has the prefix bio on it, which means living. And so the idea is if something has a lot of biodiversity, it has a lot of different living things. And when we use that word biodiverse, we usually think of areas like the Amazon rainforest or places where you see, you know, hundreds and thousands of different species of animals and plants all sort of crowded together in one small space. I'd never heard Yunnan described as a biodiverse area, but apparently it is pretty good at growing things.
Mm. Yeah, especially according to what Amanda told us, you can see why with all of these different climatic regions actually merging in that area with the number of lakes and the number of rivers that it has. Mm. Yeah, it's very diversified. Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting.
But we do go on to see in this column that there will be some challenges that growers will face, and one of them is financially. It says that they will have to invest heavily to guarantee consistent quality. And this is according to experts.
And we had some hints of that in yesterday's show where we discussed how long it takes to actually sort of grow coffee bushes so that you can get coffee beans from them. And yesterday we contrasted that to the length of time it takes to grow tea trees or tea bushes. And so if you think about it, farmers who want to switch from tea to coffee, they have to spend a number of years sort of without producing a crop. They have to be working at changing the farm over, but not really being paid. And so that's why they need the investment. We also saw yesterday a hint that maybe some foreign multinational companies will be involved in investing in that change. Yesterday, they mentioned Starbucks and Nestle, I believe.
Yes, according to the co-founder of Shangri-La Farms, the Safi Malik, he said it's still very messy, which means this is not, you know, a clean cut by any means. And Shangri-La Farms is actually quite interesting. It says that it is a boutique coffee brand. Usually when we think of the word boutique, we think of clothing, don't we?
Yes, we usually think of like independent standing clothing shops that may have a very specific clientele or customer. And so when we think boutique, also limited numbers of what they're selling to people.
Yes, I think one of the ways we describe the word boutique is small and fashionable. Mm. So Shangri-La Farms actually is organic farming. So they encourage their farmers to use organic farming. They also have gourmet honey and some other lines as well. And all of their coffee is grown at 800 to 1,500 meters above sea level. So that seems to be the right latitude for really good coffee. And you know that if it's a boutique coffee brand, okay, that it's expensive.
Right.
Very, very expensive. And that brand, Shangri-La Farms, carries beans from Yunnan Province.
So here's Safi Malik. He explains why things are very messy. And by saying messy, he means they're just maybe not up to the quality of his boutique coffee, right? But he explains it by saying a lot of farmers don't have training. And that's interesting because often we think of farming as a profession that maybe doesn't require too much training, but that is really not the reality of modern farming at all, is it?
No, I think it makes me think that in first world countries, farming has become quite a science. In fact, I have many friends, myself in New Zealand, that are dairy farmers, and they actually went to university and have degrees in agriculture just to be a farmer, which is very different from other parts of the world where it's considered, a laborious job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's also true that the process of taking things from a farm to your house where you can eat them or drink them is very, very complicated. You need people who are able to process the food. You need industries that are able to store the food. There's insurance industries in case crops fail, and all of this different kind of stuff. It's not easy to just create this entire system. And so you can't do it very quickly. And that's why this investment and commitment is needed.
Right. Actually, he says that there's great coffee there. It just needs to be found and worked on, which I thought was very interesting.
Right. So probably needs the input of all these different industries to bring it up to the quality that they're hoping to get.
Mm-hmm. But they go on to say at the end of this column, a big test is whether Chinese farmers will remain committed to the crop through price fluctuations. I think this is a big test for any farmer. But what does this actually mean, Simon?
Well, really, here they're introducing us to the idea of risk in this process of change. These farmers, they're changing the way their farms work. The province is changing the way that they support and supply farmers. But they're doing it without knowing how much money they're going to earn at the end. The price of coffee fluctuates. Fluctuate here means changes all the time. And so it says specifically this year, growers are being offered about $1.20 a pound, which is half of what they earned 2 years ago. And so really, it's very hard to predict how much you're going to earn when you have all these coffee farms up and running.
That's right. And so actually, it is a big commitment to stay with it, because if you're used to receiving, you know, that's $2.40. That's a $1.20 difference, which is quite a bit for 1 pound, right? For a pound of coffee. If you're selling tons of coffee, big, big difference in price. So can they hold on to the fluctuations until it stabilizes or remains the same or consistent in price? Well, let's go to our second column on page 42 now, and let's go to our reading.
Reaping the benefits. Few have profited more from Yunnan coffee than Liu Minghui, the founder of Aini Coffee. The son of subsistence farmers, Liu grew up 300 miles from Pu'er in a remote mountain village with no electricity or running water. Two of his siblings died of malnutrition. No one thought to brew the coffee that grew nearby. After earning a university degree in agricultural studies in 1986, Liu joined a United Nations program in Yunnan aimed at developing coffee farming. The experience helped launch Liu's export business. Now a millionaire, Liu speaks halting English in a city largely isolated from the outside world, except for a small, single-runway airport. That's where Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz landed in 2010 to negotiate a deal with Liu to produce coffee in Pu'er. Liu likes to show off a photo of the American executive visiting his processing plant. My parents were growing rice, corn, and sweet potato to survive, said Liu, a stout, highly energetic man. They never would have believed that I would one day grow luxury coffee.
So our heading for this section is called Reaping the Benefits. And when we think of the word reap, we usually also think of the word sow. So when you sow something, you plant it. And when you reap it, you harvest it. So here, you want to harvest the benefits of growing coffee. And we are introduced in our first sentence to Liu Minghui. He's the founder of I Need Coffee. That's, in English, it could be very close to I Need Coffee. But this means Love You Coffee, right? And he is the son of a subsistence farmer. What does that mean, subsistence farmers?
Subsistence really could be used to describe a lot of the farmers in the world. It's a term that's used to describe people who are just earning enough to survive. So they're growing enough food for their own family to eat, but they're really just barely getting by.
Right. They don't really have enough to sell so they can live. And we can see from here, it says he grew up 300 miles from Pu'er in a remote mountain village, no electricity and no running water.
Right, because subsistence farmers don't make a profit, so they don't have that money, extra money for electricity or even to try to establish a system of getting running water. And so, in fact, the result of living this way for his family was that two of his siblings died of malnutrition. Siblings meaning his brothers and sisters. And of course, that word malnutrition, we see the word nutrition, which is to do with good food or eating good food. But when we see the prefix mal there, that means bad or wrong. So bad nutrition. So they died just due to the fact that they weren't getting good quality food.
Or any food.
Or any food in that case.
Right.
That's right.
And the end of the paragraph says no one thought to brew the coffee that grew nearby. So I think this is referring back to what the co-founder of Shangri-La Farms says, you know, that needs to be found. The coffee obviously is already there. So if they are not investing heavily in buying the trees, they actually have to find the trees that already exist there and brew that coffee.
It may also be that these coffee bushes kind of grow wild in the area.
Hmm.
You know, it mentions here that no one thought to brew the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may go back to this idea that Chinese people have traditionally found coffee too bitter. And so they saw it as sort of not a useful product. So they neglected it, not realizing maybe that it had big cash potential.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so we see in this next paragraph, the realization came through Liu, or one of the people was through Liu. It says, after he earned a university degree in agricultural studies in 1986, he joined a United Nations program that was aimed at developing coffee farming. So there were already United Nations were out there looking, how can we help this province or this area, or in what ways can we farm this area?
Well, it looks like it's specifically for developing coffee farming. So somebody noticed the potential or saw at least one coffee tree and thought, oh, this is very interesting. What can they do? Mm. I think it's interesting that what he has gone through, Liu Minghui. You know, he grew up on a subsistence farm and obviously very, very poor, but he managed to get a university degree in agricultural studies. So he picked a very wise degree for his area of the world. Okay, and this experience helped him launch Leo's export business. So launch we usually think of as a ship, but here it just means to start or to begin something.
It also mentions that he's now a millionaire, and so that export business he has obviously been very successful. His export business, in particular, referring to selling things to another country. And I would guess here that he is selling coffee, because that's what he talks about with the writer.
It seems like it. And also, we see how much his status has changed. He's gone from not having enough to what?
A millionaire. It says, now a millionaire, Leo speaks halting English in a city largely isolated from the outside world, except a small single runway airport. So, yes, he is a millionaire, but he continues to live just in poor, which is largely isolated from other places. So hence, perhaps his English is not so strong. Halting here means that it is maybe slow or stopping or starting repeatedly. And so, yeah, his English is not fluent.
But good for him. You know, really, good for him for learning English enough to be able to communicate, we'll see, with other CEOs around the world and not giving up. I mean, I think all of our listeners, you should all be encouraged by this. Mm-hmm. You know, use what you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And our advanced listeners, of course, because they're advanced listeners, will know about the importance of practicing your speaking regularly. And it tells us that Leo is in an isolated city, and so he probably doesn't have very much chance to practice speaking in English.
Right.
Something that some of our listeners might experience too, and they really just need the encouragement to keep on trying.
But you never know. The outside world may come to you. Just in this case, Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz came to where Leo was rather than the other way around. Often we think about, I will need to go abroad. I will need to travel. But you never know what kind of life situation may happen to you. In this case, this CEO, who is very famous, Howard Schultz, came to find Leo. So very interesting.
And we learn here that he landed in 2010, so he was there like 3 years ago, to negotiate a deal. And so we knew the Starbucks was looking at this area of the world as well. It was probably made known through the United Nations program.
Right.
You know, so the CEO of Starbucks landed there to negotiate a deal with Leo about what?
Well, he wants coffee. And you can see again from that map we have on page 41 that there are a lot of Starbucks coffee shops in China. And one of the things Starbucks likes to do is locally source coffee, which means get coffee from the area they're selling it in. And so I would imagine that Leo's business became a big part of that. It mentioned earlier that most of China's coffee is grown in this area. And so if you want coffee and you want it to be from China so you can sell it in China, you have to talk to Mr. Leo.
Also, if earlier yesterday we learned that if China is wanting to increase, or Starbucks in China wants to increase its stores double the amount to 1,500, they are going to need a lot of coffee.
Right. And so Schultz was there to negotiate a deal with Leo so that he would produce coffee in Pu'er. Actually, Simon, you and I were in China, in Beijing, about 6 months ago or so, and we went to a Starbucks, and the coffee was great. At least I enjoyed my cup.
Perhaps it was poor coffee.
It could have been.
There you go.
And what does Leo like to do? I mean, it's kind of rare that somebody of this status, Howard Schultz's status as a CEO of Starbucks, would go to this isolated, remote mountain village.
That's right.
It just has has anybody ever landed on a single runway airstrip?
I have.
I have, too.
Yeah.
I have not.
It's small.
Very small. And semi-scary.
Okay. Yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah?
Yeah, you hope it's going to land.
Okay.
Yep. So, Leo, he likes to show off this photo he has of the American CEO visiting him. For those of us who've lived in Asia for a while, you'll be very familiar with this experience, taking pictures with the group of people you meet for business or with your classmates, maybe. And that's the picture that Leo is showing.
And especially the word show off, you know, it means that you're very proud of it or you mm-hmm. deliberately bring attention to it. So perhaps you are in the room, it's on his desk or on his wall, and you'll be chatting with a person and they'll say, hey, look at this picture. This is who I had a picture taken with Howard Schultz. And so when we show off, we are deliberately wanting attention about something.
Right. And I think it's kind of cool that actually the picture was taken at the processing plant, you know. So it looks like that Schultz is concerned about and interested in where the coffee is produced and how it's processed.
Right. And we see a picture below of just a part of that kind of process for coffee beans. Perhaps this is also is from Pu'er and just the beans that are grown there.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to Leo now. He says that his parents grew what, Simon?
Rice, corn, and sweet potato to survive. So again, that idea of being subsistence farmers, they were growing just enough to survive. But Leo contrasts that by saying they would never have believed that I would one day grow luxury coffee.
I don't think any parent would probably believe that, right?
Right. And luxury coffee also, you know, using the adjective luxury, again, meaning something more than enough, you know, mm-hmm. top line, high-priced coffee.
And I love the description of Leo. It says, a stout, highly energetic man. This word stout is a great word. It means slightly fat.
Yes.
But it's a nicer word to use than saying stout.
That's right. I really encourage listeners to use this word. It does mean overweight or heavy, but it is a more polite way to mention somebody or to describe somebody. So perhaps, listeners, you can definitely use this word stout.
And usually we use it for shorter people. We don't usually say he's tall and stout.
No, that's correct.
Often you see it with like short, he's short and stout, right?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so what is one thing we want to leave our listeners with today? What is one thing you want them to remember, Simon?
Well, obviously change is often not easy, and that is especially the case here with changing from tea to coffee in Pu'er, and it requires a lot of commitment. But hopefully, if you stick with things and you make the changes that you need to make, you'll be able to reap the benefits or enjoy the benefits of having made that change. And I hope that is true for these various farmers in Pu'er, and I hope that is also true for our listeners.
I think the same thing. Perhaps you, as advanced listeners, you're thinking, wow, this is difficult. I'm reading this article. I'm having to highlight a lot of words. I don't understand what they mean. But if you also stay committed and continue to just keep doing what you're doing, you will eventually reap the benefits of reading Advanced Magazine.
That's right. And so we'd like you to post on our Facebook or write into us and tell us how you feel about tea becoming coffee, or something you've made a commitment to that you've found it difficult to stick with, but it's been worth it. We thank you for joining us today. We hope you will come back again tomorrow for Advanced Studio Classroom. Bye.
Goodbye.